I'm an addict named Trey, and it's good to be here tonight. Good to be clean. Thanks for asking me to share. Get a little nervous when I share sometimes, and I feel a little bit of those nerves right now. So we'll see how this goes. But I reached back out to Gary, asked him, well, how long, and is there a topic or anything, and he basically just told me to, I think, kind of do the history type, just the basic, what it was like, what was like getting clean, and the early recovery stuff. Because I told him, as Southern and slow talking as I am, there was no way I could talk about my whole life in 20 minutes. But I can talk for 20 minutes, right? That's not that hard. So anyway, I started using, I think I was 12. And I liked it. It made me, I don't know that it made me feel normal, but it made me feel good. And it was like, I don't know, a friend or something. And so I tried different things. And I mean, my story's not that much different at first. There were some things I liked more than others. And Greg, that I think they record different speakers for putting us, I don't know, posterity, maybe. I'm not sure. Go ahead, Gary.
The secular NA website has recordings.
All right. All right. So, yeah, I started using very young, and I should have known my first time, my very first time getting shit faced was with two of my buddies. My parents weren't there. We were into their liquid drug cabinet. And the long, make a long story short, right when my mother was pulling up from work, these other two kids were passed out and I was still going. And I did a swan dive into a concrete driveway. And I did it on purpose. It was like I just didn't know. I was so messed up that I didn't think that that would be a bad and so looking back on it, right, I mean, that should have been like the thing. Hey man, you don't want to do this. This is not going to work out well for you. But I didn't. It took a little while to heal from, and my parents were horrified that I had done all this and burn cigarette hole burn holes all in their furniture and stuff. And but that's how it started. And I used pretty, I guess I would say that it wasn't real unmanageable for a little while, other than that first go round. There were a few instances, but it wasn't like horribly unmanageable all the time. My life didn't just go to shit immediately. I enjoyed it, and it was part of my identity. At some point, I kept experimenting and trying new things until I found some things that I really had a difficult time controlling, and I really had less manageability in my life with these new substances. I think I was 16 when I had, it wasn't the first time I'd OD'd, but it was the first time I'd OD'd and I actually needed to be at the hospital. And that resulted in me going to a treatment center about an hour and a half away for adolescents. And I have to say, after about a couple of weeks of being in that treatment center, I kind of wanted to stay clean. I was sort of vibing with what they were talking about, right? I mean, everything, but I had this one reservation, and for me, the reservation was marijuana. It was like, okay, I see how all this other stuff is, I keep getting in trouble every time I do all this, but that there, that's different somehow in my mind. And I got out of that treatment center, I was in there for 28 days. I was back when there were 28 days. And I was actually in there a little longer because they had to detox me for about a week from these other things I was on. And so I stayed clean for 30 days. The thing I didn't do, they told me, they said, you're going to need to connect with Narcotics Anonymous in your town. And they had Narcotics Anonymous meetings in my town. I just didn't go to them. I drove all the way back over to the town where they had taken us out on a van and to this one big meeting in Raleigh, North Carolina, at this Our Lady of Lourdes Church, I think was the name of it. It was this big ass meeting, and everybody looked so cool, and everybody had on leather jackets, and it was just like, okay, I felt comfortable there, but I didn't feel comfortable anywhere else. So me and this guy that lived close to me, we would drive over like once a week, and we stayed clean for 30 days. And well, I did. I don't think he quite made it to 30, but the bottom line was we didn't have enough meetings to go to. And just as a little funny story, one of the things I said to a person in treatment. So again, I was 16 years old, and I was kind of fucked up in the head. And so this young girl comes in, and she was light, real white, like just super white, light skinned, blue eyed, blonde haired, like albino looking chick, really. And my pick, she was cute, and my pickup line to her was, "Damn, you have pretty blue veins." So, that was the game that I was using when I was 16 years old and strung out. So I relapsed on marijuana, and I told everybody. I was real honest about it, and I didn't want to do it again. I felt like I'd learned my lesson, all this. Within a month, I was full-fledged back into full active addiction again. It's not funny because it damn near killed me. And I did things that I regret. And I harmed people, including myself. And so that went on for 3 more years. And I got a whole new set of consequences that included potentially getting to serve some time in prison. And I was trying my best not to do that because I had some friends who had spent some time in there, and it didn't really seem to do much good for them. They were actually worse when they got out. At least, that was my experience. So I didn't really want to do that. Plus, there weren't any women in prison, and the food I heard was really bad, and I was like 140-pound junkie, so prison wasn't really going to be the best thing for me. Luckily, the court system hooked me up with Randolph County Mental Health, and sorry, I see these things come up on the screen, and I already had a probation officer. So these two people basically set down some rules, said if you follow these rules, you won't have to go pull this time. If you don't, you will. So basically the person at mental health told me that I needed to go and get this piece of paper signed. It could be AA or NA, and I needed to go get this piece of paper signed twice a week. And if I failed to do that, or if I didn't piss clean, or didn't pay my money and hold my head just right, do everything else they asked me to do, that I got to go to prison. And so I didn't want to go, so I did what I was supposed to do. Within about 2 weeks of coming to Narcotics Anonymous, we have 4 meetings a week at that time in the little town where I got clean. So I did have to go to another fellowship some to go to a meeting every day. Once I got into the routine, I started listening and I was staying clean. I didn't know if I could. Now I was scared that I couldn't. And basically, I kept hearing the same stuff. People kept saying the same things and I started paying attention and they said, that don't use no matter what. I don't know if they said no matter what back then, but they said don't use, give phone numbers, call before you use, not after you use, get a sponsor, get a home group and participate in that home group and work the steps. And there was a little phrase that everybody used back in those days. The fellowship was interesting. I got clean that last time, September 17th, 1989, and the fellowship was it was a little different, you know. I guess early on it had been a lot of bikers and a lot of dope heads and shit, and so there was still a component of a lot of like biker people in the, and I partied with some, but I didn't really, I wasn't, I didn't have a Harley, or I didn't, you know, I had a leather jacket, I think, but I didn't really even hang out with these people that much, but they were different, you know, and I kind of liked some of them, but their saying was, "Work the steps or die, motherfucker," and that's what they said, you know, and they could be rude, and you get your feelings hurt in meetings, or I did, and I'm a lot of other people did too, including some of them, and you know, it was just, I don't know, kind of harsh. But that was kind of good for me at the time. And I got this guy to sponsor me, who was sort of a, he was one of these biker guys, and he was kind of hard, and he'd spent a bunch of time in prison. And I picked him on purpose because he was a hard ass. He reminded me of like a drill sergeant. And I was afraid that I would relapse. So I wanted someone who I thought would stay on my ass. And he was really good at that, right? I mean, he was excellent at staying on my ass. An example, and just kind of being a general, I love the guy. He was a good guy, but he could be an asshole. Just be a general asshole sometimes. But you know, I went over to his house one time, and he said, "Hey, I need you to take me somewhere. Can you drive? Take me somewhere." I was like, "Yeah." So we were riding somewhere, and we wound up, after he told me, "Turn here, turn here," we wound up at the prison, at the prison camp in Randolph County, North Carolina. And I'm like, "Hey, man, why are we here?" The only time I'd been in there was when they took me on a tour to try to scare me straight, you know, and I didn't really want to be in there. I had a bunch of friends in there, and I got to actually see some of them that, I think, that first night. And he said, "Oh yeah, we're doing a meeting tonight. It's called H and I, and you're going to be on the panel with me." And I'm like, "Oh yeah? Well, I didn't agree to any of that." He said, "Well, I didn't ask you to agree, you know, but we're here now." So that's the way I got introduced to doing service. And that story's probably very similar to a lot of people. You know, voluntoldism was part of Narcotics Anonymous back then, and it probably still is, but I don't know. I think it's a little different now, probably a little healthier now in some ways. But you know, I got into it. I started having some success in the rest of my life, and I really liked being clean, you know, and I didn't want to relapse. So I did what I was told. They said, you know, do this, do that, do that. I did everything. I mean, they had me praying and all kind of shit, you know, and I was doing what I was told because I wanted to stay clean. My home group was awesome. Loved that place. I think I stayed clean for a long time on resentment. There was a woman in my home group who was my grand sponsor's wife, and she could be a real piece of work, but ended up, you know, being a close friend of mine. But early on, when I was getting that piece of paper signed, which I'm glad I had to do that. That helped me, by the way. So anyone that has to get their paper signed, you know, get that damn paper signed, right? I mean, and stick around. But one night I had to get it signed by her. She was the chairperson, and she was sitting down. I was standing up, and she looked over her glasses at me, and she said, "We've seen people like you." And I said, "Like me? What do you mean?" And she said, "Yeah, once this paper's full of signatures, we won't see you again." And I thought, bitch, I'm going to show you. I was mad as hell. I mean, I was mad. I went and called my damn sponsor. I was like, "Can you believe she said that?" And he just thought it was funny. And it may have helped me stay clean, right? Because there might have been some times I just didn't relapse because I just didn't want to give her the satisfaction of being right. And whatever it takes, I don't give a damn what it takes, you know, for anybody to stay clean, you know, stop using and get through whatever the hell I had to get through to make it to some clean time, right? I mean, because all I could think about was using for a long time. I fought with addiction in my head all the time. You know, I would be driving down the road anytime I had any money in my pocket, and everything would start talking to me, and my brain would say, you know where it is, you know they got it, and I'd get angry and just start like cussing at myself and talking to myself, because I didn't want to get high, man. I wanted to stay clean. After a little while, I realized that I was one of the few people that were very young in recovery, and a lot of these other people that they were kind of they were religious. I'll just say they were religious people, a lot of them, and they went to church, they went to bed early, and I was 19 and single, and I wasn't trying to do that, right? I mean, I had other plans, so I had started developing another reservation. I thought that Narcotics Anonymous was going to just be so boring that I wouldn't be able to tolerate it. Meetings were fine, right? And I enjoyed the little joking and shit that we did, and the coffee, and helping out, and having a purpose, and having a group of people that want me to. But I wanted some action too. I mean, I was a young man, and I started developing this thing that maybe this ain't for me. And then I went to a Narcotics Anonymous dance. I guess that was probably in like 89 or 90, around here, around High Point, Thomasville, Greensboro, Asheboro, in the middle of North Carolina. And man, y'all, there was a lot of crazy behavior at that dance. I mean, people were shaking their ass. There was all these cute, girls in mini skirts, and everybody was acting like they were acting a lot like people did, in some of my early parties before I became like a strung out junkie, when I was actually having fun. And I thought to myself, we're all going to remember this shit tomorrow. That's the difference. We'll remember this tomorrow. And so the first time I went to a convention, I just thought that was the greatest thing. There were people playing poker games running all night, there were marathon meetings. Dances again, people just getting wild as hell at the dances, and I thought this is fantastic. And so I've always had a soft spot for the type of service that where we actually do something together socially, particularly dances and conventions. I'm a little old, long in the tooth now for like all this dancing and shit. I go to bed at 9:30. I don't go to church, but I do go to bed early. And, I mean, as most of y'all know, this is a free thinkers meeting, and I'm here on purpose because I don't believe in God. And I love the fact that we've got somewhere to go, because early on in recovery, I would share about it sometimes. But I mean, I kind of kept it to myself most meetings. I didn't go to every meeting just blasting that, hey, I don't believe in this God shit and that kind of thing, because I mean, I kind of needed to be part of Narcotics Anonymous. And most people that I knew in Narcotics Anonymous prayed and did other things sometimes. And it's interesting. One of the more religious people that I was associated with in Narcotics Anonymous early on, I asked him, I said, well, man, why don't you, y'all religious? I mean, y'all go to church, read the Bible and all this kind of stuff. And they were like, yeah. And I said, well, what should I do? And the guy actually told me, he said, you should just keep staying clean and keep coming to Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I guess he realized that, one, I didn't really believe in that, but two, also, I wasn't really ready to deal with all of that. And he's probably right. I probably would have ran. I probably would have just, I might not have made it. But it's nice to have a place to come. Gary just gave me like a 5-minute warning. Thank you, Gary. I go to other meetings that aren't secular now, and sometimes they're fine, sometimes they're good. And other times I have a hard time tolerating all the discussion about God. But I think at some point in my recovery, I just became more irreverent about it. And if someone made some comment or statement in a meeting or around a meeting or after a meeting about, there's no atheist in foxholes, or you can't stay clean without prayer, and you can't stay clean without God, I would just sort of raise my hand and go, sure you can, motherfucker. I've been clean a lot longer than you. I don't know what the fuck you're smoking, but I'm clean and I don't believe in that shit, So like I said, it got easier once I got more time. But early in my recovery, I mean, it wasn't 5 years ago, the first time I went to my first Freethinkers meeting, and I've been clean 35 years. So for a long time, I would still say it in meetings, though, with I don't know. I don't know how long. Even early on, sometimes I would say, y'all, I just don't believe, because they told me to fucking be honest. It's like the first goddamn thing everybody talks about is honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, honesty, open-minded, principles, principles, principles. I'm like, okay, well, the first one's honesty. And I don't believe it. Keep coming back, boy, you'll be fine. You'll eventually believe it, that kind of stuff. And I didn't like that, but I kept coming back. Mainly because I like this way of life, and the other way of life got to where it really sucked. It didn't suck always, this whole, I hear all kind of crazy shit in Narcotics Anonymous that I don't think is true. Like my best day, my worst day clean's bettered my best day user. Well, I'll be damned. I've had some bad days clean, man. I mean, I've lost people and shit and cried all day long. And I had some parties using. So you, there were some times using wasn't terrible the whole time, but it got bad. If it had not gotten bad, I would not be here. So anyway, that's just a little piece of my history. And that gets me, I guess, through like the first 4 or 5 years clean. But I'm out of time, so I'm not going to go on and talk about all this wonderful guru level recovery that I've been doing the last 30. Let's say I got Austin laughing. Anyway, I love y'all, and I'm just an addict named Trey. Thanks.